Hey everyone.
Hi everybody out there.
Welcome to Open Class number 29. It's funny, like we didn't do this last Friday and it already feels like, oh, this is so long ago.
Yeah, it does. It's true.
How are things on your end, Michael?
Yeah, things are good. It's been a really great week monitoring the member chat that we have going all week long for our members in the school. And it's been just some great discussion this week. Great comments, great insights. And one of the topics that came up was the circadian rhythm. And I know you did a broadcast on that earlier in the week. And I was just going to share a little bit about it's kind of a famous experiment for us sleep nerds about the circadian rhythm. If you want, I can just launch into that.
Yeah.
So just for a couple of minutes here. There was a lot of interest in the circadian rhythm once this European guy learned how to record brainwaves. Like when they detected like the brain was doing things, was emitting signals and stuff, they were like, oh, we can measure stuff, you know, like sleep. And so what that led to was the first of, I think, a series of experiments of like deprivation, you know, hey, good morning, these researchers would go into like caves, basically. That was what they had. They didn't have like fancy laboratories, you know. They were like, well, a cave, that's like deprivation of time, light, everything. You can control the environment, the temperature's the same, everything's like the same. So this one famous researcher who was an Eastern European immigrant named Nathaniel Kleitman, who came over, did his PhD at University of Chicago, eventually went on to discover REM sleep. He became what's called the father of sleep medicine, really famous like sleep guy all through the 1900s. Well, in 1938, he did a famous experiment in the Mammoth Caves in Kentucky. And he and a student researcher lived in a cave for like 32 days, constant temperature, no light. So they had artificial lights so they could turn off and on. And what they did was really interesting. They recorded two things. They recorded their sleep and wake patterns, and they recorded their body temperature. And what they wanted to see was that could a human like go on a different time, like sleep pattern that's like more than 24 hours? Like could they live on like a 28-hour day was their idea. And what was interesting is that as far as the sleep side of it goes, not the body temperature, but the sleep side of it goes, the researcher, Dr. Kleitman, who was like in his early 40s, I think, early mid 40s, he was not able to go onto that long of a cycle, like a quote unquote day night cycle that they artificially could arrange, you know, because it was constant everything. So he wasn't able to do it. His the research grad student, I think he was like in his mid 20s, he was able to do it. He went on like a 28-hour quote unquote day. And so that led to some discussion about maybe the circadian rhythm, like when you're younger, it's a little bit delayed, you know, and a lot of people kind of have found that, you know, younger people, they tend to like stay up later, they sleep in, they're kind of that delayed phase. There's like always a kind of a trend towards that. And as people get older, it's almost like the opposite. It kind of like goes back. So that may have caught that in an example of that. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. And then the body temperature side of it actually was really interesting that it stayed on a 24-hour cycle. It didn't change. So no matter what they did, their body temperature stayed on kind of a 24-hour rhythm. You know, it kind of fluctuated every 24 hours. So that was kind of just interesting, you know, an early study, kind of circadian rhythm stuff. Went on to other cave studies. And then finally, like in the 50s, they came up with like, you know, laboratories and stuff that they could control things. They didn't have to go into a cave. It's really interesting, all the other stuff going on. Like they had their bed, like in like the posts of the beds, they had two beds on there, and the posts, they put like buckets of water in the post because they're like critters crawling around and stuff. I mean, it's like really some crazy stuff. So it's really an interesting series of studies. If anyone wants to look it up, Nathaniel Kleitman, cave studies, Kentucky, you know, 1938, you can read more about it. And it's just sort of interesting about the circadian rhythm.
No, it's very cool. And I was just thinking as you were talking here that we should do a special episode from those caves.
Wow, not for 32 days though.
Open Class 467 from the Mammoth Caves.
I found a website where they actually had like the newsreel of that. So like, you know, it was like old school newsreel, you know, kind of like World War II-ish kind of look to it. And it's like the guy's like got his head wrapped in like a, you know, a sweatshirt. It must have just been freezing. I think the constant temperature was like 53 degrees or something like that for like a month. It was just insane what these people did, but they really, really wanted to test it out themselves. And this guy, Nathaniel Kleitman, he went on to do like submarine studies, lived above the Arctic Circle for a while, like any kind of weird deprivation of time, and just to see how the brain reacted. And it gave a lot of insight of how our normal physiology is. And then, yeah, in the mid-50s, he discovered REM sleep with this other researcher and even William Dement, all these people. And then this Nathaniel Kleitman, just to finish up, he lived to be, I think he passed away in 1999. I think he was 104 years old. So he lived a full life, which actually is really interesting because he did crazy, crazy sleep stuff through his schedule all over the place for most of his life, you know, like when he was a researcher and stuff. He lived to be 104. So like, you know, so we talk about how like short sleep insomnia doesn't really like cause any harm to your health. And it's like, well, I know it's like an N of one, but he probably more than anyone put himself through crazy, crazy sleep deprivation things and time, you know, absence of time stuff and all that. He lived to be 104. So anyways, I'll leave it at that. An interesting series of studies.
Absolutely. And, you know, another thing that came to mind as you know, you're hearing you talk here was like, what if, I mean, oh, this is never gonna happen, but what if, you know, somehow we, or maybe it will happen, maybe in 2000 years, we will move to another planet where they have like a different day and night. Like, will we be able to adapt to that over time or not? It's like, interesting question.
Really interesting questions, yeah.
And Milena's here live with us, super, super fun.
Hey, Milena.
So this came to mind the other day. What do you think, guys, of the whole EMF and sleep? And I'm thinking like, I don't know what that is. She says, something has to do with the low frequency electric exposure can affect sleep, apparently. I've seen this come up on forums and people speaking about it. Thoughts. Okay, I got it. So some type of like low frequency electric exposure. Is that the reason why we have insomnia sometimes? What do you think, Michael?
I have absolutely no idea. I haven't studied it. What can I even relate it to? You know, I've read studies where they try to like, you know, like the binaural beats and stuff, kind of like different, you know, maybe sound frequencies and stuff and all that. I don't know. I'm just at a loss. I haven't researched it. I have never thought about it.
I think I can share some from this. Like, I don't know exactly what this is, but something that you probably heard of and that I've done some research on is this thing called you know, transcutaneous electric. Now I blank out on the name, but it's basically where you put like an electrode in your ear, an electrode in your other ear, and then this kind of low intensity electric current flows through your brain. So it's kind of like an electric brain stimulation that you can do. There are these devices you can buy. And you know, when you look at studies, there's a small studies that suggest that they may be helpful for sleep, et cetera. And for a while, like in my previous life, I was like, this is interesting. I actually had my previous hospital buy one and I gave it to some of my patients with insomnia. I'm like, try this but I realized that it doesn't make sense. Like that's not the thing. Sleep is when you leave it alone, sleep is a very robust and predictable thing, you know? And anything like if you floss or not, whether you tie your shoes with your left hand or right hand, all kinds of things can probably have a little impact on your sleep, like 20 seconds more or less or things like that. But the only thing that really matters is how you think about those things. So a little bit of electric stimulation or more or less of that, I don't think it has any significant impact. But if you start thinking about it, it can. In both directions, by the way.
Yeah.
It can make you worried and you can sleep less, or you can really believe in it and it gives you kind of that confidence. Yeah, this is going to help me. Oh, yeah. You know, so that's kind of my thought on this one.
Yeah. I always use the phrase, save the receipt. You know, if you buy something like that, save your receipt. I've been in this field a long time, seen a lot of things come and go. And if there was really science behind it, it was like a true effect and all that, it would be well known. Everyone would sleep fine. Doctors would be prescribing it left and right. And but doesn't exist. So yeah, I mean, that's just a little, that's anecdotal, but that's, which
takes me to another favorite thing. And by the way, Don, nice having you with us. Thanks so much.
Hey, Don.
Evening in the UK. Is like the cold, the common cold that there are like thousands and thousands of like home remedies, like try like, you know, honey with this or like that. If any of them actually did help, we would all be doing that thing. So that's a kind of similar thing.
Yeah. And like with that, it's sort of like, you know, maybe warm tea with honey. It like makes your throat feel a little better, but does it make the virus go away? You know, that's a different question.
Good point. So. Exactly. Very well. Well, let's jump into, we have a couple of, actually, we'll start here with a really nice message that came in via Facebook. And it was actually like almost two weeks ago, but we didn't do this live together. So I saved it for today. This is from Connie, who we answered like probably two of her questions here in open class. Let's read this. I'm sending this message to say how thankful I am to have found your YouTube page, Facebook page. I am 68 years old. And the last 2 years, I have self-medicated myself to sleep because of anxiety over two medical conditions, one of which is gone and the other which I told would be getting better after a 5-year period, and it's actually gotten better. The over-the-counter meds quit working, my sleep pill also. Now I know, thanks to you, why? Hyperarousal. Daniel, I purchased your book, and honestly, it was like you wrote this with me in mind. I was so busy doing everything to sleep. It was causing me to have anxiety, then I did not sleep. I would search the internet for how to sleep and then would not sleep from reading. Now from watching and listening to your videos, I'm sleeping. All over the counter meds and the sleeping pills are gone. I had one night I could not sleep. I did not look at the clock, got up, did some artwork until I was bleary-eyed, got back in bed and slept. I've told my brain, this is all okay. I'm not gonna get upset. And if I only sleep 4 or 5 hours, so be it. The untruth that is on the internet of use of magnesium, go sit on the corner for an hour, what to eat, what not to do, just perpetuates anxiety more. Thank you both so much and keep up the good work. You have been a godsend to me. I cannot wait to tell my neurologist today how well I am doing. What do you think?
That's Michael? Great. That's those such great comments. That's just like, it's so illustrative of someone who is really, really getting it. You know, they're figuring things out, and that's usually the way it works. You know, you educate, you know, you encourage people to kind of like do the detective thing, you know, like look for evidence of, you know, some thoughts that might not be accurate, you know, misattributing stuff, but then they figure it out. They kind of like, they come to the realization kind of like by themselves at some point. And then it's like this aha moment, and everything just kind of, you know, it just goes great from there. And that's just a great example of it. That was just, and really kind words. Thank you so much. That was Connie, I think it was. Really, really kind words. Yeah, really kind words.
Same thing. So it's just super nice hearing a message like this. And it's that exactly the magical moment when you're like, aha, like I don't have to do anything to sleep. All these things are actually just making me more anxious, et cetera. Super, super helpful. And an interesting thing that I'm thinking a lot about lately is how it is this paradox of when you start working with somebody, it's not easy work. It's not easy to get to a place where you sleep well. But the paradox is that you have to kind of put in effort to exert no effort. You have to work.
Exactly.
Not do anything, right? It's that kind of paradox there.
Yeah.
But, okay, cool. Here is some live comments. I've slept for about 7 hours for 3 nights in a row. Gas and brake models definitely help. Love this. And I have to
say, good job, George.
It is the brake that is the key here, George. It is that you are actually okay. You're willing to have insomnia. You're like, I'm not gonna fight it. It's okay if I'm up at night. That's why you're sleeping so well. I always like to point out that it's the brake, because when some people go, oh, I'm sleeping 7 hours, 3 nights in a row because I made myself so sleepy. That's a slippery slope. Now you're kind of trying. But if you go like you, George, like, well, 7 hours, and that's because I'm not fighting it. I'm okay with being awake at night. You sleep well forever. 100%.
Yeah. How well said. Yeah.
Melina says, tons of videos here on YouTube. Should go check some out and let me know what you think. Yeah, maybe we'll do that one time. And Melina and George having a little conversation. Neil is here.
Hey, Neil.
With Nielsen in Israel, it's not simple to be simple. It's, it, you know, it, those kind of insights are so true. And sometimes they sound, does that really mean anything? But it does. It's like,
oh, what? Yeah.
Right?
It's so true. It's so true. You know, it's like that final stage is getting to the point where you realize that, you know, the break is just what it's all about. You know, it's very rare that, you know, someone, once they kind of address their insomnia, it's rare that they're spending like, you know, 3/4 of the day in bed and sleeping away and taking big long naps and like really reducing their sleep drive at night. That gets sorted out pretty early on. People kind of figure that out. And then it becomes just a break thing. And that's where it's the change in thinking. It's not so much like change in behavior, it's change in thinking. And so these insights like that, you know, that it's sleep, it just happens if you allow it to express itself. You know, you can, it takes some effort to get it to express itself in without you getting in the way. So it's sort of like, I don't know, like I've tried to think of this gas brake model and kind of like an analogy. And it's like, okay, a car, right? Gas brake is like for a car. It's almost like someone sometimes, not everyone with insomnia, but sometimes someone sort of just like rests their foot on the brake, you know, without realizing it. And so they're kind of like pushing the gas and they're doing and the car doesn't work very well. It's like having trouble. And they're kind of like doing something on the brake side that maybe they don't even realize. And that could be a thought about sleep. Like in the back of their mind, they got this thought like, oh, it's that, you know, it's the whatever supplement I need to take or whatever. And it's sort of like driving a car with resting your foot on the brake sometimes and not really realizing. So when you learn that your foot is kind of on the brake a little bit, and then you learn to not have it on the brake, there's an analogy for you. It kind of is the same way with insomnia.
That's a really, really good one. And just kind of add one thing to that one would be like, you don't realize your foot is on the brake. And what is that? That could be something as simple as, why am I not sleeping? That question, mm-hmm. that curiosity almost, simply that, is enough to have a little bit foot on the brake there. Very good one.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I just want to add this one because, you know, speaking of these kind of like short little kind of insights there, mm-hmm. one that I just tweeted out this week that I thought was a good one was this one, like, the only thing that you have to control is your desire for control, right? If you can control your desire for control, you're good. That's another little one like that. Let's see. Ellie is with us too. Ellie, good morning.
Hey, Ellie.
Friday. Hey guys, what do you think causes you to wake up with head tensions and burning eyes? I think this is an important question. It's a common question, specifically the eyes. It's the one that doesn't come up mm-hmm. super common, but it's fairly common too. Like, why are my eyes like burning? And there was one who, I think it was here on the YouTube channel, who said he actually went to eye doctor. They said everything's fine. But I mean, that tells you how real these experiences are. Head tension too. And my answer to this one is that if you look at a recent episode I made where I talk about like battle scars, I think of this as kind of like, these are the battle scars, like your burning eyes, your tinnitus, your tension, your pain, and all those things. Where do they come from? Why do you have that? And I think short version of this answer is, these battle scars come from the battle. It is the struggle that is causing this. It is like you always thinking about sleep, trying to figure it out, like fighting it, trying this, trying that, thinking like all that kind of, that's so draining, exhausting, like mentally to focus so much on sleep and trying so much that I believe more than anything else causes this, like the headaches, the tension, the burning eyes and all this. I think that comes from the struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, if you think about it, you know, if you spent, you know, all day worrying about anything, by the end of the day, oh yeah, you just have a headache. And I mean, I would just be drained. You know, if I was really worried about something all day long, and you know, that has happened from time to time, it's life, right? You know, something happens and you just worry about it and you're just worried all day long and it just internalize it. And you just like really are just trying to come up with like an answer or something. It just drains you in every way. And so maybe it's a headache, eyes burn, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just from the worry about
it, right?
The thing.
And it, you know, you saw me probably looking around here for a second because there's this book I was reading called like Unlearning Pain, which I can't find right now. But he made, I think the one thing, it was a great book, by the way, but one thing I really took home from it was this one, how if you think about this, for example, like you had a really intense day at work and you come home and you have a headache, you know, and you take some Motrin, nobody thinks anything of that. It's like, yeah, you know, it was, you had a kind of intense day, you thought a lot, it was stressful, that made you have a headache. And what was the other example he had that was really good? I can't remember it, but basically the thing is like, there are many scenarios where it's natural. We all think it's supernatural that thinking a lot makes me have a headache. I had a stressful day, I was thinking a lot, that made me have a headache. Meaning, there are many examples where it is not strange at all for us that how we think caused a physical, you know, experience. You know, stress causes headache.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. So similarly here, it is actually not far-fetched at all to say that it is thoughts produce physical sensations. They do.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Very well known. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very well. And I'll share more from that book when I find it. But anyway, cool. This awesome. Some live questions here. Let us head back to some other questions that come in through mm-hmm. comments and emails. This is from Christopher. This was a comment that I thought we could learn a lot from, and that will hopefully be helpful to Christopher and anyone else too. Let's read this. Christopher said, I've been struggling with insomnia for at least 5 years now. I was a daily marijuana smoker for many years prior and never had sleep issues. I started to have sleep issues after going through a very difficult time in my life, and I noticed the marijuana wasn't keeping me sound asleep throughout the night like it once did. I got into the habit of taking various sleeping pills, anxiety pills, antipsychotics to help me cope. Although I would never get quality sleep with these medications and would often hit a wall when I developed a tolerance to them. Tried CBTI a couple of times, but always end up calling it quits after a week or two, and I give in on some nights with sleeping pills. I'm 7 nights now, back at it, determined more than ever. I've been averaging what I believe to be around 3 hours a night these past few nights, and it's been brutal. My body literally feels broken. My head is pounding, and the amount of tension I have on my upper back is insane, yet I have faith things will get better. I'm actually falling asleep on my own and managed to fall back asleep twice after waking up during the middle of the night. I'm learning to embrace every small milestone. Gratitude goes a long way. One interesting thing is that when I wake up and can't fall back asleep, I've been staying up in bed to read, and I've noticed my hyperarousal goes away quickly and have a better chance of falling back asleep. In the past, I've tried leaving the room and only returning once I felt sleepy again, and would instantly feel awake once I hit my bed. I'm also avoiding looking at the time, and I believe that has been a game changer for me. I wish nothing but the best for all my converts out there who are struggling to sleep. So as I was reading this, there were like a lot of really important things we could talk about. But first of all, Christopher, of course, well done. You are on the right path. Hang in there. But there was a couple things I want to talk about, but you, Michael, what are your first things that you think are important here?
Well, I think, Christopher, you know, I think you've proven that the supplements weren't putting you to sleep because you slept without them. You know, supplements, they generally can cause a little bit of relaxation and things like that. But relaxation doesn't guarantee sleep. They're different, right? You can be really relaxed, but not truly sleepy. So recognizing that difference is super important in the long run. And it sounds like you're on your way to recognizing that there is a difference between being really tired and exhausted and sleepy. So that's the first thing I would say. Second is I'm kind of sensing like maybe there was a comment about the time, you know, really make sure you're not tracking that. I think it really helps.
Actually, sorry, Mike, I have to begin. Actually, he said that not checking the time has been a game changer.
Yes, that's what
and
it was. Yes.
He said, I think I sleep about 3 hours. So I think Christopher's actually, I think, definitely doing the timeless night here.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you reckon. That's right. I now I'm remembering that. Yes, absolutely. Fantastic. That really it just sets the stage for everything else, you know. And then your experience of getting out of bed and becoming really kind of more alert versus sitting up in bed and reading. Fantastic. You know, kind of the traditional, you know, the traditional advice is get out of bed if you can't sleep. That's just like it's just such a blunt, like, you know, sledgehammer approach to being awake at night. You know, it's like, it's, of course, just what you don't want to do is be trying to sleep. That's your goal. Your goal is not to ever try. So if you recognize you're kind of awake, you know, and you stay in that like curled up position with the light off, you're probably trying to sleep. So sitting up and reading in bed, you're not trying. And that's as simple as it has. That's as complicated as it has to be. If sitting up in bed works for you, fantastic. Some people do like to get out of bed. Maybe they're kind of hot and they're just like, they want to stretch a little bit. Great. If that's what you like to do, great. Do that. But don't feel like you have to get out of bed. And you have figured it out. And that's just fantastic.
100%. 100%. And, you know, I just this other thing came to me now, like Neil's thing, like it's not simple to be simple. Like a similar thing that just came to me, like your goal is not to have a goal. It's like another one. It's like, or another version of it. It's like your goal is non-achievement. Your goal is to not try to achieve anything. It's kind of like it just came to me. But that said, I think one thing that I really picked up here, Christopher, was this. I think this was an interesting one. Christopher says that for years he was sleeping marijuana and he was sleeping well, right? And then he says, but then I started not sleeping. I went to stress. And then I saw that the marijuana no longer put me to sleep. Very, very interesting. And this is a classic one. This is, you know, you're not sleeping and you're looking back. I used to smoke weed and I slept, but now it's no longer working, which is actually an easy way to think about it, but that's not what happened. The thing here, the realization is the marijuana never made you sleep. It was just something you enjoyed doing and sleep came your way. But then when you're not sleeping, you're approaching it like an effort. Like it was working before, but now it's not working, but it was never working. It was the fact that you were not trying, you were just enjoying it. That was the key. I think that was an important one. And the second one I want to add, or do you have an immediate comment here, Michael?
Well, you know, when I hear people talk about stuff they take and sleep, like, oh, this works. And I usually kind of go, problem solved. And they're like, well, not always, or, you know, it's starting not work as much. And I'm like, okay. So eventually I get around to telling people, you know what puts you to sleep? Nothing. Okay. We talk about wakefulness creates sleep. Okay. But aside from that, do you know what, you know, what can you do? Like, what can you ingest? What can you do? Like stretching, what, anything, what can you do to put yourself to sleep? Nothing. There is nothing you can do. And I think you just have to kind of get to that point where sleep happens when you are no longer in the way. The break is completely off. That's when sleep has a chance to happen. And I tell people, if anyone comes at you and says, this will put you to sleep, you need this, turn and run. Just run as fast as you can away from that person. It is not, you know, if it works, it's going to be placebo. It's going to be just like, you know, something that relaxes you. And maybe that was the issue. The issue wasn't sleep. It was relaxation. And so, you know, that's okay for relaxation. But then again, that's another issue. So nothing puts you to sleep. Don't ever, you know, really, I should say, really resist the urge to think that something is making you sleep, because it's ultimately not. It's just, that's just 32 years of talking to people about their sleep is, you know, nothing puts you to sleep.
That's a big one too. And I think the last one I want to comment on here for Christopher is another important one, which is Christopher says, like, I tried CBTI a couple of times, but I kind of abandoned it. Now I'm trying again, which I think you're on the path. I think you're definitely on the path, Christopher. But when I hear people say, I try CBTI, I think that person is thinking, I'm trying sleep restriction. I'm going to try to get up at 6 and stay up till 1 a.m. or something crazy like that. No, but something like that, you know, that's what you're trying. And the important thing here is like anything else, don't make it an effort. Don't think of it as like, I'm trying this so I can sleep. Try it. Try to think of that as, okay, I'm giving myself less hours for sleep, less opportunity for sleep. And that is my way of letting go. If you approach it that way as a non-action, as a non-achievement, that is perfect. And you'll do fantastic, Christopher. Let us know if you have any follow-up questions. And thanks for sharing some encouragement as well. It was a very nice comment, this one. Cool. So yeah, we have some little bit shorter questions here to finish up with. Here's Misha saying, hi, Daniel. It's been a hot minute since I came back with a query, mainly because I've been doing super and almost completely had forgotten I even had insomnia. But this week, I'm seeing a new bout of it. For the past 4 days, despite being tired and sleepy, I haven't been able to fall asleep until the wee hours of the morning around 5 a.m. I can't seem to understand why, as I'm not worried about sleep, nor do I have the looming threat of needing to wake up early at least for 3 weeks. I'm just a little agitated, I would say. Not enough to be hyper-aroused. Maybe I've slept quite soundly, even in agitated moments, even when that agitation is around sleep, but I've just been a bit angry, LOL, for the last 4 days. Any tips? Thanks as always. I want to kind of jump in real quick here, Michael, because I want to use your analogy here and say, actually, I want to use the exact wording. Let me read it. She says, I'm seeing about it. I haven't been able to fall asleep. I can't. Okay, here it is. I can't seem to understand why is the wording that Anisha has. And going back to like the gas and break, so gas is like sleep drive, makes you sleep. Break is like hyperarousal, makes you not sleep. It is enough with just being in that, like, I wonder why I'm not sleeping. That is enough to kind of keep the break a little bit there. Even if it doesn't feel like it, that break is there and that's keeping you from sleeping. So, you know, I just want to sneak that one in there. And then to you, Michael, overall, somebody's sleeping well, hits a couple of nights where they don't sleep that much. What is your general thoughts, comments on what to
do? That's a good sign that you're pretty normal, I would say. You know, it's just, you know, sleep is like one of those things. It's just, it can come and go. You know, you could be doing like everything, like quote unquote, right. You know, you understand the gas and break and everything's going, and then something can just happen, you know, and often you have no idea what it is. And so what I don't encourage people to do is to just start on this huge exploration of trying to figure out anything that possibly could have caused it, because then you get those ideas in your mind. It's like, oh, I think it might have been that thing, so I need to change it, I need to research it and look into it, and then you just, it's the rabbit hole and you're in it. You know, even a few nights, you know, don't look back on the nights, don't try to figure it out. I mean, I'm assuming it's nothing obvious, like, oh, I don't know, a big garbage truck started to empty the trash behind my apartment at 3:30 in the morning, every single morning, and make like huge noise. That's like, that's different. That's obvious. All right. If it's something that you don't really know, don't go on a big exploration, because that exploration will just take you down the rabbit hole. So you know what you need to do. You know, you understand, you have a good understanding of how, you know, sleep works and the gas break idea and all the other cognitive things that, you know, the thinking things that are important, you know. And so you have like a circumstance, it's just sort of come up. And so don't let that increase your desire to sleep. When you desire to sleep, that's when problems start to really kick in. So it's normal, couple, 2-3 nights, even 4 nights, I don't know. It's normal. If you have, maybe it's something just sort of ancillary that's kind of stressful and you're thinking about it a lot, you know, plan that, you know, have something to do during the night that you really enjoy. So if you're awake, you can kind of just get your mind occupied in something that you enjoy. And no time, the timeless night, keep your morning time pretty consistent, get some sunlight in the morning. I'm a big believer in that. Get out and just enjoy the day. You know, don't wake up and just sort of sit around. Get out, like forget about the night. The night's over. You're done. Get on with your day. Get on your feet if you can, you know, get outside if you can, move around a little bit. That's about all, that's what you can do.
Resist the urge to explore, have a good day, and you'll be on your way. Actually, that's right. That's right.
Kind of does.
And I can share that Misha actually commented after this that she was already doing better. So well done. Great. Super happy.
Good job. And
good comment there from Michael. Neil says, I truly think that self-kindness, not judging yourself, is always the key. The opposite from judgment is love. When you feel love to yourself, accepting whatever happens, sleep and other good things will come your way. There, you can't hear this one enough. It's
yeah.
And I want to say, just that this is one of the, out of the kind of like big aha moments for me as a coach, this one came pretty late. This is something I started figuring out maybe a couple of months ago, that the whole like being so hard on yourself. Why can't I get it right? I should have done this. Why did I do that? Oh, that is such a big component of why people continue to have trouble sleeping. So yeah. Self-compassion is super important. Okay, let's continue with a, I think this is actually the last one. Let's see. Yeah, this is the last one. Okay, from Milos. Hi, Daniel. I'm Milos. I'm from Serbia, 24 years old. I've been struggling for 7 months now with insomnia. I think it's paradoxical insomnia. I'm sleeping for 6 to 8 hours, waking up like I haven't slept at all. I feel fatigued during the day and can't do anything. This really affects my life, and it worsens by time. Taking 1 milligram of Ativan, lorazepam before bedtime, and I have a lot of vivid dreams. Is there any hope to get better? I am really desperate. I think if I'll start here, to say, first of all, as always, thank you, Milos, for reaching out. Super, super helpful, you know, to us because we have something to share and talk about, but hopefully to you and everybody else, most importantly, of course. So thank you for that. And, you know, I want to start with paradoxical insomnia and say this, that paradoxical insomnia is basically when somebody is sleeping quite a bit more, much more actually, than they think they sleep. And in your case, Milos, it's interesting to note that for you, it doesn't seem to be, you're pretty sure that you have it, because you say, I sleep 6 to 7 hours. You kind of know that, but you also know that it doesn't feel like it. But before we go, you know, forward, I just want to say this, that paradoxical insomnia is really just another way of experience insomnia, like ordinary, usual, garden variety, typical, you know, old, boring insomnia. It's just a way of experiencing that. And I want to say that everyone has some paradoxing going on, meaning people who sleep well, they think they sleep 1 hour more than they actually do. People who have insomnia typically, you know, on average, estimate sleeping 1 hour less than they actually do. So nobody is that good at estimating how much they sleep. And I'm just saying that so to say that somebody with paradoxical insomnia just has a little bit more of that, like that kind of like miss, that underestimation is just a little bit more of that. But there's nothing unusual, there's nothing particularly different with paradoxical insomnia. So all the things we talk about here, education, the gas and brake model, like befriending wakefulness, all that stuff, it's helpful for every type of insomnia, if it's paradoxical or not. That's number one. Number two, I have a sense here that, Milos, that maybe what I hear here is more of the question of like unrefreshing sleep than anything else. When somebody is like, I sleep a fair amount, but I just feel tired. I'm just like not refreshed. I just like, I can't get things going and stuff like that. And when that happens, my go-to answer when that happens is, if you think you're sleeping, you know, this amount of time and you don't really struggle with insomnia, then, you know, maybe sleep isn't the culprit here. You know, Coach Michael, even I think even more than myself, likes to point out things like sleep apnea. Yes, sleep apnea can make you feel unrefreshed for sure. But that's typically like, you know, everyone check with your doctor, but that's typically fairly obvious. Like you're snoring a lot, you're waking up snorting, etc. But if there's, here's the thing, if there's nothing obvious going on with your sleep and you're feeling unrefreshed and tired, then sleep is probably not the culprit. And things like you know, just like you can have a lot of insomnia from focusing a lot on sleeping more, you can feel really, really tired by focusing on your fatigue. So oftentimes like it becomes this other self-fulfilling thing where you're like, why am I so tired? I got to do this. Now I'm more tired. I'm resting more, but I'm still more tired. And then the fatigue gets kind of a life of its own because you're feeding it by paying so much attention to it. So I think the first thing that comes to my mind, Milos, here is that if we think that sleep is probably not the culprit, you don't really have that obvious like struggle with insomnia, then the best thing to do is just kind of take sleep out of the picture and say, okay, I sleep 6 to 8 hours. It doesn't feel like it, but I sleep 6 to 8 hours. That's good. You know, I'm not going to tweak it or think try to improve it because that's a rabbit hole. And instead, I'm going to just, even if I'm tired, I'm going to show myself that I can do things even when I'm tired. I'm going to go out with my friends. I'm going to have enjoy. I'm going to do things. And then when you're showing yourself that, oh, I can do this even when I'm tired, you're not so afraid of being tired. And it kind of loosens its power over you. And you're in this good, you know, this virtuous cycle now. Things are just getting better and better and better. So those were my immediate thoughts there. Comments on this, Michael?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, the sleep apnea thing, if it's an issue, you know, ask your doctor about your Ativan too, because there can sometimes be like hangover effects where it leads to like kind of some grogginess the next morning. So maybe that's something. These are questions for you and your doctor. Other than that, I would say, what, three words, four words, set it, five words, set it and forget it. I'm sorry. You know, I think the night where you just, you know, just set a bit of a time window and just forget it. In the morning, you're done. You know, when you get up, you just turn and face your day, and you do, the best thing you can do, I think, in the morning for your sleep is to forget about your night. It just doesn't help. When people, like, if you do some sleep tracking, maybe with like a Fitbit thing or something like that, I encourage people not to even check their data in the morning. I'm like, wait till dinner. Wait till the end of your day. And then if you're curious, look at your data and be like, oh, that was interesting. You've already gone through your day. So it can't influence how you feel during the day. So it's a sneaky little, you know, like a little psychology trick there. You know, don't let something sort of make you feel a certain way. Don't let it, don't give it the opportunity. And if you're, you know, if you're thinking about your night, you wake up and you go, oh yeah, I think I was awake for, you know, an hour and 45 minutes at one time, and then like 45 minutes at other time, and you're doing all these calculations, it can make you feel fatigued because you get a mindset, I guess is the phrase. You get a mindset. So set it and forget it in the morning. Get involved in something. Go through your day. Like, it doesn't even matter how you slept. And you might find that at the end of the day, you know, if you want to like check your data or think about the previous night or for a moment or whatever, it's like, you'll just realize that it doesn't really affect my day that much. So, you know, I think that's, you know, I would encourage you to talk to your doctor. If you feel like you're not rested in the morning when you get up, but you feel like you're getting adequate sleep, you know, that's a little bit of a red flag. If you haven't had that discussion, it's an easy thing to do. Have the discussion about anything that might be affecting your sleep. Maybe a sleep study is in order. And would the benzodiazepine that you're taking, could that affect how you feel in the morning? Those are just two doctor questions. Get them out of the way. Get those answers done. But then for the rest of the stuff, it's just, you know, don't let your perception of your night affect how you feel during the day. Plan things, all that. Just get on with your day.
Don't let your perception of your night affect your day. That's a good one. And, you know, a final note here, I want to just bring up something our good friend Martin brought up when we had a round table together with him. He brought up the example of, like, you have hardly slept at all for 3 days, and on day number three, you get the news that you won the lottery, you won $1 million. You would immediately be like, yay, you feel amazing, right?
Yeah.
It shows you how, like, your thoughts have much more impact than anything else, you know, including sleep. So that's an important one.
Yes, they do.
Yep. We have one, I think, last question here coming in live from Ashikin. I have insomnia too. It's 2 a.m. in Malaysia. I can't sleep. I see. I want to say, you know, thanks for tuning in here. Sorry that, you know, you're not sleeping. But I think if this, I'm assuming that you've had trouble sleeping for a while, and this is just like not a random thing. And I just want to say, you found a great source here in this channel. Just learn about sleep, and you know, spend some time here, and you will find everything you need to sleep well. And I just, for someone who's like, it is 2 a.m. in Malaysia, I can't sleep, I think my tip here is, anything you do to now try to make yourself sleep, like, I gotta find the thing that makes me sleep, that's gonna make you more frustrated, agitated, and you're gonna sleep less. It is 2 a.m., or I say, stop checking the time. You know, don't know what time it is, always helps. And do something you enjoy right now. Pick up a book, a podcast, like, even if it is 2 a.m., make wakefulness a friend. Don't fight it, and sleep will come your way.
Yeah. And recognize when you're sleepy again, if you get sleepy again. That's key. It's like, don't just like go back to bed because, oh, I'm bored. You know, no, you got to feel that sleepiness in it. And I think, to me, the most salient way is to perceive that you're losing focus on what you're doing. So if you're reading, you start rereading. If you're listening to something, you start forgetting what's being said. If you're doing a crossword, you start staring blankly at the paper. You know, these are cues that you are now truly sleepy, and that's the time to, if you feel up to it, lay back down, turn the light off.
when you feel those cues, it's time to either go back to bed if you're not in bed, or kind of like, you know, allow yourself to sleep. But don't wait for those cues. Don't wait for sleep. Don't be like, do I feel that way or not? No. Just like, let those cues come to you. Let sleep come to you, and you're all good. Perfect. That was a nice, nice last comment there. And what do you have planned for our members today in our, you know, members only dropping class?
Yeah, well, there's been some really good discussion during the week from our members. And so I'm going to talk about a couple of those, some of the conversations we've had, and kind of see where people are in their, you know, in their journey towards insomnia immunity. Yeah. And, you know, there was that circadian rhythm question that was kind of going back and forth during the week. So I'll see if anyone has any more questions about that. And, you know, and just allow the members to kind of like, share experiences and thoughts and insights. And that's that whole like community thing is really starting to grow. And it's great to see, you know, they're just people sharing their experiences and really like changing thinking about sleep. You can kind of see it happening as the messages come in during the week. So super excited to do that coming up a little over an hour.
Yeah.
And it's great for the members.
Me too. And I will just say last thing here. I think it was 2 weeks ago we announced our new program, which, by the way, anyone can check out if you go to our web page right here. Now, when we announced it, I said that for the first 5 people, there would be kind of a special gift, which I will send a copy of Set It and Forget It. And there's only one left now. We have 4 students. So if you want to be the last one to get a signed copy of this book, then head over to the site and sign up now. And I think it'll be, I'm joking. I'm serious, of course, but I jokingly, I'll send it, of course. But yeah, I think anyone who needs a little bit of support and community and guidance on your way towards immunity, head over there. Okay, everyone. Let's see, was there one last comment here? Neil says, one last comment here. The fact that Biden is in the new president can cure insomnia. Maybe not. I don't know. That's a funny one. But that said, on a serious note, I had 3 clients this week tell me, actually, like, this election thing has caused me so much insomnia, you know, because watching it and, like, the anxiety and all that, that's very true. But anyways, yeah. Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks, Michael. See everyone soon, okay?
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Great to see you.
Okay, oh, just one sneak in this one, last one. Thomas from Denmark, you know, wonderful work. What's your thought on the importance of getting out of bed the moment you wake up? Oh my gosh, I was just about like, hi everyone. We'll just say very, very, I'll just say like, it is not important at all. It's not important at all. Thomas, thanks for the support from Denmark. And just know that whatever you do to become friends with being awake is the key. If you stay in bed and read and enjoy that, you're befriending wakefulness, great. If you get out and have a cup of coffee or tea or whatever and you're befriending wakefulness, perfect. Don't check the time. Enjoy your wakefulness and sleep will come your way. I speak a little Danish, so I'll just say, Hatte godt, Maja, Hilsen von... Jeg prater med svensk, men lite dansk også. Okay, all right. Hey, bye, everyone.
I'll get Google Translate out on that one. Thank you for the question. Thanks, Thomas. All right. See you, everybody.